Welcome to the SLP Talk Show, real talk with Carrie about stuff that really matters.
Hey, it's Carrie, your fast-talking, speech therapy-loving host. While you are driving, cleaning, exercising, or whatever it is you do while listening to podcasts, I'm going to be chatting about pediatric speech therapy stuff. But I don't want our time together to feel like work or be boring. You already work enough, and you already have enough boring stuff to do in your life. So let's get going and have some fun. Hello, and welcome to episode 54 of the SLP Talk Show. I am Carrie, and I am here with Jim.
Hello, hello.
We are doing something extra special today. This is not a regular podcast, so you guys are in for a real treat. We are in Mount Pleasant, Michigan at the Michigan Division for Early Childhood Annual Conference. I will be doing the keynote presentation in about an hour, but they asked us to record a podcast here first with a live studio audience. Audience, say hi! We are so excited. And what is so fun is normally as a professional speaker, when I travel, it's just me and Jim stays home and takes care of the business and holds down the fort at home. And they said, no, we want Jim to come too. And Jim was like, why would they want me to come? And I said, they have this fascinating idea. They want us to do a podcast live. And he's like, why? And I said, I don't know, but we're gonna do it. So we are always up for something new, aren't we?
Yeah, Matt, the only thing I wanna say first is fire up chips, I guess.
Yeah, is that our thing? We are at, where are we? Central Michigan University, is that right?
So
it is a gorgeous campus, and when I posted on social media that we're going to be here, fire up chips is what everybody replied. So I'm like, yes, like I don't even know what that means, but that's our thing now. So I think I'm supposed to reply fire up. So we are fired up this morning. It is bright and early. We're in a different time zone, so it's even earlier for us. But
I'm still probably 5:30-ish.
Yeah, it's early at home, but that's all right. We are going to go ahead and jump in. No, before, we have to do something special. Someone already asked me if we're going to do Chump or Champ, which is a little trivia game that we normally play. And normally what we do, because Jim is a trivia aficionado, is I ask him four questions.
Right.
But we're going to change things up a little bit. So what Jim has done is Jim has picked the questions. I have not seen them yet. And he is actually going to ask me the questions. And if I don't know the answer, which I probably won't
turns of table.
Yes, because I don't do trivia. then I'm going to ask the audience to help me out. Okay, so this is going to be, I'll go first and try, and then I'll ask the audience for help. So, all right, Jim, it's all you.
Okay, first question.
All right.
Do you feel good?
I'm no, but that's okay. Have this many people to help me out, so we're going to get it.
What is the state bird of Michigan?
Why are you whispering?
of Michigan.
What is the state bird of Michigan? Gosh, I feel like
you know this bird.
I know this bird?
Yeah.
So it's a common bird.
Mm-hmm.
State bird of Michigan. It must like cold weather. The penguin. No, I have no idea. the cardinal. I don't know. Okay,
no.
What? You guys help me out.
It could be somebody's name.
It could be somebody's name.
Yes.
Somebody's name?
Think Batman.
Think Batman. Oh, it's the Robin.
The American Robin.
Lots of help. Did I get that right?
Do we count that one?
Well, of course we do, because the audience and I work as one. All right, question number two.
This one's going to be hard, so I'm going to give you...
multiple choice?
Within two.
Oh, okay.
Okay. How many international seaports does the state of Michigan have?
How many international seaports? And I have to get within two?
Mm-hmm.
15.
No, that's a little high.
That's a little high.
Anybody?
Anyone know?
Okay, it's five.
It's five. Oh, yeah. You ask hard questions.
Port Huron, Bay City, Saginaw, Muskegon. Is it Sault Ste. Marie? Sault Ste. Marie. Sorry. And Detroit. So there you go.
All right, we're one for two.
What is the highest mountain range in Michigan?
There's mountains in Michigan?
Yeah, apparently.
All right, people. Michiganites. What do you think it is? Yell it. What?
Porcupine Mountains.
That's it.
Oh, now we need to go.
Very
Porcupine
good.
Mountains.
See,
all right.
That counts. Okay,
all right, so we're two for three. All right.
And then the last one, and then I have a bonus one.
No, we don't need bonus. We're good. Give us the question.
Okay. How many people attended the 2024 NFL draft in Detroit? I'll give you within 100,000.
How many people? Just the first night, you mean?
Nope, the whole time.
The whole time?
The whole 3 days.
700,000.
775, you got it.
All right, give us the bonus question.
Okay,
the
bonus question.
We're gonna be
any Michigan Wolverine fans here? No?
A couple.
Go Blue? Okay. How many players did they get drafted in the draft? Nailed it. 13.
Woo! I love it. I love it. We are champs. Yay! Way to go, studio audience. Carrie right. is 0 for 4, audience 4 for 4. Way to go. Excellent, excellent, excellent. All right, so we are going to go ahead and get started with the topic. And one of the breakout sessions that I'll be doing at the conference later today is about play-based learning. And so it really got me thinking. Years ago, I was actually presenting in Texas, and it was a professional development course, but a few of the professionals had asked a few parents to join them. And so there were a few parents in the audience, which is unusual for a professional development course. But at the break, I actually had a mom come up to me and she asked me the most interesting question. She said, Carrie, I've really enjoyed your talk today and I'm wondering, have you ever offered play boot camp for parents? And I was like, oh, tell me more about this play boot camp. Like, what would that be like? And she said, well, after listening to you talk today, I realize that I don't actually know how to play with my son. She said, here's what happens at our house. My husband is really good at roughhousing, you know, the rough and tumble and doing all of that. And I'm really good at like reading books, you know, to my son. And, you know, so I feel like we do those things really well. But in watching you and watching, you know, videos of you playing with kids and the play-based learning you're talking about, I realize we don't do that kind of play. And so I'm wondering if you've ever thought of actually kind of reminding adults how to play. So it really got me thinking that this is a genius idea, wouldn't you agree?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it really is genius to think about kind of doing play boot camp. I've never done it, but this is why parent coaching is so important. So as an early intervention provider, you know, we talk so much about parent coaching and intentional modeling for the parent.
Sure.
And so I have a couple stories. If you've heard me present before, you maybe have heard these stories because these are two of my favorites. But I was working with a little boy years and years ago, and his dad was actually there for the home visit. So this is an early intervention session, 2.5-year-old little boy, and he is struggling with expressive language development, so doesn't really have any words yet to speak of, and I'm thinking maybe this child might have some motor planning difficulties, childhood apraxia of speech. So what I'm really focusing on is trying to help him find his voice. I'm trying to help turn him into a communication risk taker. And so I was explaining to the parent, normally mom was there, but mom had an appointment, so dad was in this session, and I was explaining how we start with sound effects, right? We start with animal sounds and vehicle sounds and people sounds, just to try to help him, you know, open his mouth and turn his motor on and see what comes out. And so I am intentionally modeling for the dad. This little boy loved toy animals. So, you know, there's toy elephants and dinosaurs and all this. And so I'm making these toy animals walk. And I'm going, walk, 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 walk. And then I'm like, he had an elephant. And so, of course, you know, my elephant sound. I'm like, and I'm making these elephant sounds. And like, and this kid is just watching me like television. You know what I mean? He is glued to me, just absolutely mesmerized by what is coming out of my mouth. And finally the dad goes, excuse me, Miss Carrie, I have a question. And I'm thinking, oh, this is great, parent participation. This is what we always hope for, you know, in a home visit. And I said, yes. And he goes, are you like, and he kind of has this strange look on his face. He goes, are you like embarrassed to do your job? And I was like, oh, well, apparently I should be, but no, I'm not anymore. And I really thought about how when I first got into the field, I probably was a little insecure about having adults, you know, watch me, right? That I was, wasn't comfortable being silly and animated. But I realized real quickly that when you're animated and interesting, little kids are more interested in watching you.
Sure.
And so that's one story. The other story is I had a mom who loved to take notes during my home visit. She was always writing things down, which that's great, right? That was her way of learning, was to take notes. And so as I'm modeling for this little guy, I think he had like some superheroes, Spider-Man and Batman, Batman, and there was like some toy food there. And so I'm pretending that like Batman is eating the pizza, the toy food. And I'm like, oh, yum, 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 yum. And mom is writing, taking notes. And she goes, excuse me, how do you spell that? And I'm like, oh, well, I guess you can write Y-U-M, Y-U-M. But I'm not saying yum, yum. I'm making sound effects, right? And so it just really got me thinking over the years of how it comes very natural to me to be playful and animated and interesting. And I've had parents say to me multiple times in my career, oh, Miss Carrie, I just don't think I can talk like you. And I say, well, that's okay. I haven't taught you the strategies yet. And so I think it's really important that we recognize that our playful nature, that we're actually using skilled strategies, that we're not just contrary to popular belief, we're not just playing with kids for a living, because that's what most people think we do. Oh, you're a pediatric speech language pathologist, or you're an early intervention provider. Oh, all you do is
play.
Wow. Just is a really powerful word because it minimizes whatever word comes after it. So when you say you just do something, you see how they're minimizing the power of play, right? Oh, all you do is just play. So I always think it's really important as providers that we remind parents, caregivers, everybody who maybe questions what we do for a living, and remind them that we don't just play. Mm-hmm. If you wanted somebody to come just play with your child, you could hire the high school student down the street to come just play with your child. What we do, and we do very well, is we play with a purpose. Right? Which means we're embedding skilled strategies into everything that we do. And so when we really start thinking about play-based learning, I think it's helpful to consider what is play. And I think it's always important to remember that play is spontaneous and play is fun. Okay, it doesn't mean you have to be laughing and giggling. There's can be a lot of serious behavior in play, right? A lot of concentration and focus.
I always like that whenever you let the child
lead
that it goes in this direction you'd never expect it to go. It's fun.
It is fun because it's fun to see the world through their eyes, right? And through their experiences. So that's absolutely right. Play is child directed, or what we like to say, child led, right? So as an early intervention provider, I remember knocking on the door to go into a home, and the mom answered the door, and she said, whatever the child's name was, we'll just call him Joey. Joey, Miss Carrie's here. Put your fire truck away and come see what she wants you to work on. And I was like, oh, no, I don't want him to put anything away, and I don't want him to think he has to come work with me. And so it was really then in that moment where I said to the mom, oh, actually, the strategy I wanted to focus on today is how to follow your child's lead to enhance their learning and development. And so child-led, I really think it's a strategy, you guys. I don't think it's something that we can just act like, oh, everybody just knows how to do it. I'm telling you, most adults don't know how to do child-led. So I think that's an intentional thing we have to model, and we have to give it a name. So we call it, the strategy we're going to talk about today is following your child's lead.
So you explained all that.
Absolutely. Before, in the moment.
Yeah, you know, and helped that parent understand.
Absolutely.
What you're doing.
Absolutely. So instead of put your fire truck away, no, let's talk about the strategy following the child's lead.
And then, but it's important to kind of set it up, though,
absolutely,
right?
Absolutely. And again, we're back to the power.
Otherwise they don't know, like, why you're doing what you're doing.
Exactly.
Right?
And that's part of parent coaching, right? Sure. Is not just modeling it, modeling without an explanation, that is not helpful. And that's what I think I did for a long time until I learned about true parent coaching, was modeling and hoping the parent would learn through osmosis, right? They would just watch me and be like, oh, I just need to act and talk like Miss Carrie when she's not here. Well, nobody knows how to do that because they think all I'm doing is just playing.
Right.
And that's why we don't get the respect, right? Because they think we just play. So make sure that as providers that we are really honing in on and naming our skilled strategies, right? That's really important. So here are a few tips for helping adults be more playful and childlike, right? Because this is what that mom wanted from me. Like, do you do play boot camp? I'm like, no, but what a great idea, right? For years, I've thought, how would we set play boot camp up? Like, I have this idea that maybe we use a school district, like an early childhood classroom, and set up stations, like just put blocks here, and put like a ball here, and put like Legos here. And you know what I mean? Just have stations, and literally like just go with a parent and a child, and follow the child's lead, and like coach the parent in the moment. Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't know. Like, what would play boot camp look like? So I think it's something worth considering as professionals if you work in early childhood. Have you guys ever done anything like that in the audience? Is anyone? Don't you think it'd be a good idea though? I would love to. I would love it. If you guys ever
maybe
figure...
some sort of video series.
A video series might be helpful.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, think about it. There's a reason why Miss Rachel is so popular. You know what I mean? I think parents really want online support. You know, they want someone to show them how to do it. So, yeah, I don't know. I think there's lots of things that we could think about. But what I would like to do is share with you strategies for helping adults become more playful and more childlike. And when I say childlike, that is a positive character trait.
Right.
It's different from saying you're childish. If I say, oh, Jim, you're so childish.
Well, that's true.
Yeah, well, it might be true. But you would take that not as a compliment. Is that fair to say? If I said you're childish.
No, I would not.
No, but if I said, oh, you're so childlike when you interact with your nephew or when you interact with
your child. It's kind of like when you say I'm so bright.
When you're so bright. Yeah, sometimes
so, it's so condescending.
Yeah, but I mean it in a positive way. He solved some problem yesterday. I was like, oh, you're so bright. And he's like, stop saying that. He doesn't like when I say that. Anyways, okay. So childlike, not childish. So my first strategy is be animated. It's not what you say, it's
how you say it.
It's how you say it,
how
right?
Say
absolutely.
It.
And so sometimes when parents say, I don't think I can talk like you, well, I say, well, I haven't taught you the strategies yet. Because when you talk to support early language development or to maintain a child's interest, is it fair to say we talk differently than when we're just talking to convey a message, right? So absolutely, we're going to use those strategies during interactions with young children, and that's one way to be playful. We need to be interesting, but we also need to be interested. And so being interested in what the child is doing, no matter how irrelevant it seems, you've got to see the world through the child's eyes. And I think that's a real gift as an adult to be able to be interested when a young child, for example, finds a ladybug outside on the sidewalk. Like it may be the first time they've ever seen a ladybug.
I can remember one time I was sitting down with Aaron when he was like, I don't know, three years old. His play did not look like other kids
play, right?
Because he was in, you know, doing his own thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he had some bears, and he was picking this up, and you know, and then he would just throw it over his shoulder.
Oh, I remember that. He would toss bears over his shoulder.
So I sat down, and I was like, okay. I'm like, and I threw it over my shoulder, and he just looked at me like, oh, okay, you get
like,
it.
Like, this is
you
a game. This is a game.
This is a game. And then he throws one, and then I throw one.
Okay, so can I just say how amazing my husband is? So this is actually a skilled strategy, and it's called contingent imitation. So we would document that as the skilled strategy.
Really?
See, parents don't know what they don't know, and they don't know skilled strategies, but that's where contingent imitation is, where you teach imitation to the young child, but you first imitate what they do.
Okay.
And so then you get the back and forth, what we call reciprocity. See, when we use our language, it really helps us to identify that we are providing a skilled service. I know in our progress notes, we have to write it so parents understand it, but you can write it using language that everybody understands and parentheses put the skilled strategy if you need to. Does that make sense? Like, I really think that it's important that we don't forget that we are skilled professionals and we have to provide a skilled billable service even though we're working with tiny humans, right? We don't just play for a living. So I love that you brought
example
up.
I'm sure I just stumbled onto that, but I mean...
But you were doing it, and that's why it was
effective. I just wanted to figure out what the deal was with it, right? I mean, I was just like, why? Is this cool,
play.
Like,
right.
Doing this? And so, but it created this connection there, and he just was like, okay.
You get me. You
right.
get me. Yep.
So then, you know, that was good.
And that's
good,
a great
good
example.
Way for me to connect with him.
Absolutely. And this is what I love. When we do this podcast, Jim has no idea what we're talking about. I never show
him.
No, she
never tells me.
No. And so when he brings stuff up, no, it's not annoying, because when he brings stuff up like that, you guys know it's authentic. You know it's not scripted in. And so that's right. why I don't, like, hand him the script. Like, I have a small script just so I kind of stay on topic and, you know,
yeah,
we can get
I stumble through,
it.
Through stuff.
He stumbles through stuff. But isn't it nice? Yeah. I mean, it's nice to have, A, the dad's perspective, right? But also a non-provider, I think, perspective. I always call him, and somebody even commented on social media when they found out you were coming on this trip. I always say he's an honorary SLP because he's been married to me for 31 years. You know,
I know
he,
words like
he knows
apraxia
words.
And
dysarthria.
Yeah.
Yeah. He knows words, right? Yeah, it's good. All right, next strategy. Share smiles and laughter with kids, because I truly believe it's contagious. So when you smile, even if you're not feeling good, do you ever notice it just makes you feel better? And so little kids are filled with joy,
right?
Most of the time. And so mirror neurons, we're going to even talk about that a little bit later today in one of the trainings that I do, but mirror neurons are really powerful. And so when you smile and share joy, I think that it's contagious, and the child, you can bring them out of their funk, you know, a little bit. So meet the child where they're at, literally. So if the child is on the floor, where do we want the adult to be? on the floor. And isn't this, as providers, one of our biggest concerns? We always will say, if only they would get down on the floor. But mm-hmm. the same holds true if the parent is sitting on the couch, or I mean, if the child is sitting on the couch, or if the child is sitting at the dining room table, where do we want the adult, right? So it's not always get on the floor, it's meet the child where they're at, literally, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that's a really powerful, so if you use it as a strategy instead of get on the floor and play with your child more, that's kind of condescending and it sounds like you're bossing the parent around. Instead, the strategy is meet your child where they're at. You see what I mean? And so we use that in a way that we can help them understand the power of that physical connection. Next strategy, make silly sound effects. I know this does not come natural to all people. I think to early intervention providers, we're good at this, right? Animal sounds, vehicle sounds, people sounds. Mm-hmm. In fact, the first product I ever made and sold was my silly sounds cards. Really, most people think, oh, there's like 10 animal sounds and a couple vehicle sounds. And I think we have 96.
Can I just say a little bit of the history of the silly sounds cards? So she used to make these cards herself from whatever program,
like Board Maker, some kind of a CD that it was called. What the CD was called.
And she would print these out, and she would use them in her sessions. And then one of your friends was like, "Can you make me one of those?"
I need a set of those.
She watched her, watched you use them, and she was like, "Those cards are amazing." And so you made her a set, and she used them. She wore them out.
She's like, can you make me three sets, one for each of my... And I'm finally like, maybe this is something I could market. So we actually hired an illustrator from Hallmark Cards, because Hallmark is in Kansas City, and she designed our first set. And then anyway, so yeah, we have lots and lots of silly sounds, because those playful sound effects, you can pair them not only with playtime, but when reading stories, right? Learning how to be interesting and animated when reading stories. People sounds are things like, uh-oh, wee, oh man, you know, things like that. Chew, sneezing things off your head and sneezing. So I find that adults often struggle with being silly because they fear how other people are going to maybe judge them. And so I explained to parents that while this may not come natural to you, this is a strategy that we're going to use temporarily to help make you acoustically interesting. To make, because today in our high-tech world, is it fair to say kids have a lot of distractions, right? They've got iPads and they've got smartphones and they've got, you know, cartoons and Cartoon Network on every, you know, 24 hours a day. And so for the adult to be the most interesting thing in the room, sometimes you may have to use a strategy that doesn't come natural. You know, and that's how I explain it to parents. And they usually go, oh, okay, well, if it's a strategy, right, and it's something that's going to help my child learn to talk or, you know, learn to, you know, increase joint attention or whatever it is, then usually I can get parents to buy into that.
When I think that that's one of the reasons why the cards are so popular, because a lot of times you don't know what sounds to make.
Right. Parents are kind of lost.
And
like
the cards give you the sounds.
Yeah. They're like, after 10 animal sounds and 3 vehicle sounds, they're like, I got nothing else, right? So, yeah, it was amazing. When we came out with set one, it has 24 sound effects. Set two has 24. So there's 4 sets. So whatever 12 times 4 is. Does anyone do the math? Whatever that is, that's a lot of sound effects. But anyways. All right. The next strategy is sing and dance.
Okay.
Regardless of how good you are at those things. Like, I can't carry a tune in a bucket, but I am telling you what, especially, okay, SLPs, if there's any SLPs listening or in the audience, we know that our gestalt language processors, so we know that our autistic language learners are going to benefit from adding musicality to spoken language. So when we sing, we are more likely to entice the gestalt language processor.
Okay.
And we think about our son, Aaron, we remember Lori Berkner and the songs, buzz, 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 buzz.
Like,
I mean, belt it. But he didn't speak any words, you have to understand, but he was singing songs. One of the key indicators that we're dealing with a gestalt language processor, they sing before they speak words, right? And so that's why singing, but also dancing, moving your body, one of the greatest regulators for nervous systems is movement. And so today, because we live in a media manic world, our kids don't get enough movement. Do you ever find that with young kids, that they're just sitting sedentary? And what we know, and after sitting in a conference all day, you guys will feel this by the end of today, for those of you in the live audience, that you're going to dysregulate. The more you sit, the nice thing about this wonderful room we're in today is you have chairs that swivel and rock and lean back. And I'm telling you, you will stay better regulated than if you were sitting in a hard chair, you know, that didn't move. Human nervous systems need movement to stay regulated. And so when you have young children, that's why we want to talk to parents about dancing. And that's why doing the actions to the wheels on the bus and, you know, jumping, literally jumping when you're doing five little monkeys jumping on the bed. Like, we actually want to stand up and physically jump. Why?
I wish I could have done that yesterday in the airport.
In the airport?
Yeah.
Danced? Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. We were packed in like sardines. There would have been no room to dance. They would have hauled you off. Yeah, for sure. That was a wild ride. We spent more hours in that airport in Chicago. All righty. Next one, be authentic and genuine. And I think it's really important. Don't be so over the top that you're not yourself. You know, I think kids know when you are an authentic play partner. And so it's really important to still be you, stay true to yourself, and really be that authentic person. The next strategy is listen more and talk less.
Okay.
Now.
I'm good at that.
Yeah, I am not. Okay, so those of you who know me, I like to talk. And my running joke as a professional speaker. Yeah, thank goodness. Otherwise, we'd have a problem if we both like to talk as much as I did. But it's really important to... what I was going to say is, as a professional speaker, I jokingly say if I got paid by the word, you know, I'd be a multimillionaire by now, right? Because I do talk, and I talk a lot, and I talk quite rapidly.
Can we make that happen, by the way?
Can we make that happen? We're going to start billing by the word. Okay. Yeah, I love it. I love it. But I can only talk specifically about speech-language pathologists, so I'll just call out my own field here because I know this to be true. Most SLPs have an illness, and it's called... verbal diarrhea, right? Because we talk and we talk and we talk, 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 because we have been trained to narrate the life of the child as it unfolds in their day, like a sportscaster, right? Narration, sportscaster. And so the issue with that is when we do all the talking, then we're not listening. And sometimes, and especially with autistic children, it is important to zip it, right? I always tell parents, caregivers, sometimes your best strategy is silence. Playing alongside the child in absolute silence, and that can honor their nervous system. Our son, as many autistic young children, when you talk too much, they literally put their hands over their ears. They couldn't be more like communicative to let you know, this is overwhelming to my nervous system. So my son, I think, has really helped me to learn.
Yeah.
Today at age 19, if I get on a roll and say too many words, Aaron will go, ho, mom, slow it down. Like he still calls me out because he gets overwhelmed by too many words, too much information at one time.
It's kind of awkward though when you silent and
what's wrong with Jim? He's having a stroke. You have to do it in the right moment, though. You wouldn't do it in the middle of a sentence like that. That's not what we mean. So if parents misinterpret that, if they go, oh, you just want me to be silent at weird times, then, yeah, it is going to be awkward. But we wouldn't do that. The point is, when I follow a child's lead, I usually want to go up and say to the parent, because some of our strategies are going to come up here, but, for example, don't ask a question. Like, that's not going to establish an authentic connection.
That was going to be my next.
Yeah, I mean, so it's not be silent at weird times where it doesn't make sense, right? It means, so let's get to the rest of the strategies, and we'll fill in these holes. So focus on connection over instruction. How often do I say that? Like, all the time. I think especially what parents want is they want you to come in and teach their child. I thought you were going to be here to teach him how to talk, or teach him how to walk, or teach him how to use a spoon, or teach him his letters, or, you know, teach him how to write his name, right? Is that fair to say? There's this idea that we're going to get them to work, and we're going to teach them. So that's one of the reasons... parents and caregivers are often bothered by our playing, because they're like, well, you're just playing. When are you going to work with him, right? When are you going to teach him? And so I always tell parents, our first strategy, our first goal is connection over instruction. We are going to write goals for shared social interaction, right? That's how we're going to actually write our goal, so that we can actually address connection over instruction and do it. Instead of saying, well, we just spend the first couple home visits or first couple therapy sessions building rapport. Sorry, that's not a skilled service. Building rapport is not a skilled service. So we don't build rapport. What we do is we focus on connection over instruction by writing goals that the child will engage in shared social interactions with three different adults. For example, that could be how you would write a goal for that. All right, here's kind of what I was hinting on before was, next strategy, only talk when you have something interesting or important to say. Talk to build a connection, not to quiz the child. So what we want to do is avoid asking lots of test-like questions. Right. What color is it? How many are there? What shape is it? What does a dog say? What does a cow say? Can you imagine if you went...
You're making me nervous.
I know, right? And that imperative language does put a lot of pressure on the child. And so again, our skilled strategy is use more declarative language and less imperative language. See, when we use our strategies, it shows that we're actually providing a skilled service, not just playing with kids for a living, right? So we have to get better at documenting our strategies. Be a play partner, not a play director.
Okay.
So a play director, again, uses lots of imperative language. So they give commands. Mm-hmm. Bring me the blue block. Put it on the table.
Mm-hmm.
Go get the ball. Kick the ball. And then they ask questions. What color is that ball? Can you say ball? Say ball, right? So they're doing lots of imperative language, right? Yeah. So that makes you a play director. I always kind of explain to parents, think about a band director who has their hands in the air and they're directing the band, right? So a play director is very much controlling. They're choosing power and control because they think that it is supporting their child's learning. So they're doing it with a good heart. Does that make sense? They're not doing it to like,
most things are done with good intentions.
Absolutely.
Right?
That's a really good point. Absolutely. I don't think parents wake up in the morning and say, I'm going to do whatever I can to, inhibit my child's learning and development today, right? So,
exactly.
I mean, I think one of our favorite sayings we've been saying for years is parents don't know what they don't know.
Right.
And that's why parent coaching is so important, right? Because we can't just expect them to know, and we can't expect them to just watch us and then learn through osmosis. Because that's not how human beings typically learn. Okay, so don't expect the child to play in a prescribed way. Follow their lead. I promise you this, kids can smell your agenda from a mile away. So drop the agenda. There is no right or wrong way to play.
Right.
Have you ever with a young child, like, or think even about our son, Jim, if we were say, hey, Aaron, you know, he's 3 years old, and we say something, hey, buddy, we're going to play Play-Doh. Well, what if he's not in the mood to play Play-Doh? What's going to happen then?
I guarantee you that wouldn't happen.
That would have never, no, he would never be like, oh, yay, I can't wait, right?
He'd be like,
when the adult directs it, what we end up getting then is often pushback from the child. Whereas I promise you, when you engage in child-led, like throwing bears over your shoulder, if that's what Aaron's into, you're going to build that immediate connection. You're not going to have to work for it. And then you don't have to dangle the carrot with reinforcers. Oh, first play Play-Doh, and then I'll give you 5 minutes on the iPad. First play Play-Doh, and then I'll give you a cracker or an M&M, right? And we see people doing this all the time. All right, one of the things when Aaron first started getting services, one of the things the providers seemed very concerned about that was that Aaron didn't play the right way with the Fisher-Price barn. And so that was what they wanted. They wanted him to play with toys the right way. And so that's where I really started to check my own expectations, you know, as an SLP is, oh my gosh, was I expecting kids? And I guarantee you before my son, I had an idea that there was a right and a wrong way to play with toys.
Right.
But we know now that there is no right or wrong way to play, right? Okay, next one. Avoid instructing the child to say words. Oh, my goodness. This is done with such great intent, like you said, right? Parents do it. Say ball. Come on, buddy. Say ball. Put your lips together. Come on, you can do it. Say ball. 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 Come on, buddy. Say ball. Use your words. Use your words. We hear this all day long, and it is not a very good strategy because if kids could learn to talk by just having other people tell them to say words, I wouldn't have a job, right? Why would you need a pediatric speech language pathologist? So the problem with telling kids to say words is it puts pressure on them and it creates stress, and stress impedes learning. That's my favorite quote from Linda Murphy, who wrote the Declarative Language Handbook. And I just love that quote, stress impedes learning. So we don't want to create a stressful learning environment. We want to set up an environment where the child is, they want to be with you.
So the goal is say ball, right? Or the goal is for them to say the word ball.
But we're just going to model it. So instead of saying say ball, I'm just going to drop the word say and just say the words I wish they'd say in the moment. Ball.
Mm-hmm.
I usually do it three times. I call it the rule of three. That way I can use it as a strategy to parents. Ball. And then the third time, ball. And I automatically give it to them or throw it or kick it, whatever we're doing. They don't have to earn it. There's no earning it. It's just I want to get them in the habit of listening to that
target
word.
So like in sports, there's this thing where you can focus on the goal or focus on the process. Would that be more
process? Yeah, I think so.
Oriented?
Because if they don't say it, it's not the end of the world. Is that fair to say? If you want them to say the word ball, but they don't say it right now, then then the goal is to let them hear the word in the moment, right? Over and over in context. But it doesn't matter if they don't say it right now. So yeah, I think it is. It's more about the process.
Okay.
Absolutely. All right, so the next strategy. Remember that a toy is, by definition, an object for children to play with. So not all toys have to come from the toy store, right? The couch pillow is a toy, right? I love putting the couch cushion at an angle and racing cars down it, and animals can hide under it. It can be their tent, right? I mean, mm-hmm. All I need is a couch cushion, a pillow, and I don't know, give me a wooden spoon. I don't know. You know, I mean, we're good to go. Like, I don't need store-bought toys to entertain young children. Empty Kleenex boxes. Like, please don't recycle those, right? I'm all into upcycling, right? So upcycling is better for the environment, and you can think of paper towel tubes, right? All the different things that we can do with what I call environmental toys, right? Or non-toy toys, because they don't come from the toy store, but they're just as powerful. The next strategy, recognize there are two types of store-bought toys. Really important to think about this and to really coach parents and caregivers on this. We have developmental toys that are considered educational usually, and they're rule-based. So some rule-based toys, some examples would be like a wooden inset puzzle, a shape sorter, a potato head. A rule-based toy has a definitive ending point. So what's the advantage of using a toy like this is the child knows when they're done because they put the last piece in.
Right.
Right. They put the last piece in the puzzle, the last piece in the shape sorter. So these are the kind of toys that are good for kids who need to work on task completion, for example, you know, where maybe they only do like one or two pieces of a puzzle and then they walk away. So we're going to put all but two pieces in the puzzle, so there's only two left. So then when they put those two in, they finished it. They're all done. The next time we'll leave out three pieces. Then the next time we'll leave out four pieces. And like, this is what we do. We don't just play. We do it in a very meaningful, developmentally supportive way. So we think about the power of those kinds of toys that are what we would call closed-ended toys. They have a definitive ending point. But if you want to follow the child's lead, you want to think about open-ended toys.
Okay.
So open-ended toys would be like toy cars.
Sure.
Toy animals.
Mm-hmm.
Aaron's little sorting bears,
right.
You know, that really
right.
You could do a million different things with them. Blocks are open-ended. So again, we look at what toys are better for following a child's lead, and it's always going to be an open-ended toy. So again, we just want to make sure that parents and caregivers understand the difference. When it's almost a holiday where we're going to buy a gift or a child's birthday and parents ask me, what toy should I buy for my child? While I am a toy connoisseur and I could give a list, what I do instead is I just explain to parents that when you're buying store-bought toys, you want to look for toys that do nothing. So toys that allow the child to provide all the power, all the imagination, and all the sound effects. So we don't want toys with batteries, toys with screens, because those steal learning opportunities away from children. Okay. And then finally, the last thing I want to talk about is I just want to share five easy activities that you can literally do today to be more playful as an adult. So these are things we can share with parents, like immediate things. One would be, like I mentioned, putting the couch cushion at an angle and racing toy cars down it, or, you know, toy animals can slide down it. Another activity would be using a laundry basket, and you can simply roll up socks, right? Those can be balls, and you can toss them in. I like loofahs. Every time I go to Walmart, I buy a loofah, and I cut the string off, and I call them snowballs. Little kids love to throw them. They can't hurt anything. They're colorful. They're really tactily, you know, interesting.
Our dogs like them, too.
Our dogs love loofahs. We have two little Shih Tzus, and they're their favorite toy. I buy them a loofah once a month. If you have ball pit balls, that's great, but not everybody has a big basket of ball pit balls. But so, you know, you can use rolled up socks or other roll up paper. I don't care, but just tossing things into a basket. A third activity is get that muffin tin out of the kitchen. Little kids love to put different objects, you know, in the muffin tin. What we did with Aaron, he loved Hot Wheels cars. So I showed him how to put Hot Wheels in the muffin tin, and we got a turkey baster.
Right.
And he still does this, and a little bowl of water, and he gave the cars car washes. Right. So I mean, with the muffin tin. Fourth thing you can do is just get a pad of sticky notes. I am telling you, little kids love sticky notes, right? Where they can attach them to the wall, put them on the table. They don't hurt anything, but they come off. They're just great fine motor. They're lots of fun. And then my last recommendation will be container blocks. And container blocks is where you save your old food containers, like sour cream, yogurt, cottage cheese. Wash them out, dry them out, keep the lids, and then you can stack them. And the good thing is, when you can stack them really high, and when kids knock them over, they won't hurt anything like wooden blocks do, right? So anyways, those are just five very quick examples of ways to be more playful. So we're going to go ahead and wrap up. We need to get the rest of this conference going. So thanks for listening to the first ever episode of the SLP Talk Show, recorded in front of a live studio audience.
Thank you for being here.
Yes, thank you. Thank you. We appreciate it so much. If you're enjoying the podcast, please tell your friends, your neighbors, your colleagues to give us a listen. Now get out there, be kind, be accepting, put your screens down for a bit and go outside. It is a beautiful world out there. Until next time, cheers.